We will call this meeting of the Legislative Commission on Minnesota Sports Facilities to order. We have, who's on the phone?
Jeremy Miller is here.
Oh, Senator Miller's on the phone. Welcome. Senator Tomasoni is here, Representative Hoppe, Representative Dean, and Representative Davney. I think we're waiting for one or two other people. I know Representative Scott can't make it. And I think Senator Champion is going to be calling in. But we'll go ahead and get started at this point. And if we don't have a quorum, can we legally approve the minutes from our last? It's kind of a gray area. So we'll wait on those. And with that, we can just jump right into it. And with that, we could hear from Michelle Kellum-Helgen if you're ready and come up and give us an update on how things are going with the stadium and anything else you want us to know. Welcome back to the committee.
Great. Thank you very much. It's good to be here. I think most people perhaps have read about the fact that Mortenson Construction actually signed, along with our architect, signed the Certificate of Substantial Completion 6 weeks early. We got the Certificate of Substantial Completion last Friday, June 17th, and we were expected to get that actually July 29th, so they were well ahead of schedule. So I continue to remark on the fact that probably one of the best decisions we ever made was to have a local contractor that would work arm-in-arm with us as a partner. At the end of this presentation, I'm going to go through some of the highlights of the project itself relatively quickly, and we will get to the budget portion at the end, and you'll also see that we will be closing out this project with a positive contingency balance as well. So we have protected the state and made sure that we end with the project not only on budget, a little bit ahead. So I just always remind people as we look to open this building, it is definitely a building in a stadium unlike any other stadium in the country and actually any other stadium in the world. And probably the two major features that make us totally unique is, first of all, the ETFE roof. It's a clear, transparent roof. Hopefully when you get in the facility and you see it, it delivers on the promise to make you feel like you're outdoors in yet a climate-controlled facility. This roof, which actually allows you to see sun, see clouds, it's a clear plastic polymer material. It is held up by a steel structure, so the roof cannot deflate or cave in the way the old Metrodome roof, which was just one piece and was air supported. This actually is done in pieces and layers. Should it ever have a puncture or damage to a portion, you would only have to replace the one portion of the roof in that spot. And the other thing is, because of the steel structure that holds it up, you don't have any issue with the roof deflating. Of course, the other feature that we definitely see as the major significant iconic feature are those five glass doors. They are 100 feet tall and 55 feet wide. They open on a hydraulic pivot system, and they are the largest doors in the world. So they boast by the architect. This shows you one of those doors open just a crack. The doors together take about 8 minutes to open. You can open one, two, three, or all five at the same time. And we do know they open, and we also know they close, which is obviously important. Within each large door, there are 10 personal doors, regular doors that would be used during winter or, you know, when you don't have the large doors open, which is a fair amount of the time. And you can see there in that photograph the way the doors open, and then they just stand straight out to the plaza. So for events, when those doors are open, our security perimeter is outside of that area and out into the plaza, so the people would go through security and tickets would be taken well before they walked to those doors. And you can see here the hydraulic system for each of those doors that opens. And there you get just kind of that broader view. You see the steel structure above, which is the top of the doors. You can see the roof, and you can see that incredible view. Everything is being completed, including the goalposts, which are now in. I always point out on this photograph, back along the wall here on the north side of the stadium, where that padding is, are those 32 rows of retractable seats. And essentially, I remind you, this stadium was built so we could play high school and college baseball. And in order to do that for their spring game, so those schools don't have to travel outside of the state to get in their early spring games, we had to put in this retractable seating. The one thing is we've been renting the stadium for many different events. The one thing that we have talked about is it's interesting that a side benefit of this retractable seating is the fact that we are really attracting a lot of conventions and craft shows and kind of floor shows, because now we have one of the largest floor areas of any stadium around. Our exterior public park plaza space is obviously an important part of for us in fulfilling our mission for big events or Viking games, concerts, or even if you think about high school girls and boys soccer championships or football championships. We need all that outdoor space. So you can see in this rendering that was originally put together, we've got this park space that runs north-south. You've got the two Wells Fargo buildings, which are in red, on the west side or northwest side of that property. Those Wells Fargo towers that represent $400 million in private investment are already open. They have 5,000 employees now working in this area. And, of course, our parking ramp was kind of a key piece of all this, because this public-private partnership with Wells Fargo was put together with the idea that Wells Fargo needed parking. They didn't want to have to pay to build a ramp. We were already building a ramp, as well as we own another 500 spots underneath our downtown east under that light rail plaza. So those 2,000 parking spots are now available to Wells Fargo employees during the day. They pay for them. The employees pay for the parking. So now these parking spots, which had been money losers from our perspective, if it was just for our events, evenings, weekends, all of a sudden now with Wells Fargo leasing those spaces for employees during the day, those parking spaces have generated a significant amount of money. And that money for 30 years is dedicated to pay off the bonds for that city park that was done on those other two blocks. So it was a very unique public-private partnership. One of the things that the city had wanted us to do is put together enough space on our own plaza so that we could keep the Vikings tents out of the park by and large, so that the park could stay open for use, you know, throughout the summer and fall. So we have a lease arrangement for 30 years with Hennepin County, and we have half of the medical examiner's block that we have now taken and incorporated into our plaza space. The city closed Fifth Street between our downtown east plaza and the medical examiner's block. With that vacated street, we now have a very large continuous plaza space where tents and the like can be placed. This shows you the renderings of the two blocks that the city is doing as park. The authority has access to the first block closest to the stadium for our events. That second block will stay open for other use. For Viking games, the team has access to both those blocks. but their tents and structures, by and large, will stay on our own plaza property, leaving these blocks open for to the public for game day, certainly for pregame activity, but without the tents or structures that would have to be up all season long. This is actually the picture on the left is an actual picture of the park space looking toward the stadium. It's already that first block has already been sodded by Ryan Development and will be open for our public open house July 23rd and 24th. We have, this shows you what that park space will look like on perhaps game day. You see the two Wells Fargo towers to the left. You see all the housing around it. The Wells Fargo towers and our parking garage also give us the Skyway connection to the downtown. And I always point out to people right now under construction is about $1.2 billion in private economic development, private economic investment. All of it will pay real estate taxes to the city and the state, if you think about that. And the returns that are coming in before our building is even done is significant. There are four hotels that are underway in this area within a block of that. There is a lot of housing. Behind our parking garage is another development going in by George Sherman that will be a housing tower, an office tower, and a hotel. The Armory is being redone to the tune of about $80 million as an event center, and that's going to be open next spring. And there is other development that's underway all over this area, and certainly more to come. So I think we have a very strong story to tell, and we will track the private investment that happens that basically has been leveraged by the state's and city's money that was put into this. And we'll be able to track over time what that's meant to the city and the state. This shows you an earlier construction photo that shows you the Skyway going into our parking garage, and then, of course, the plaza space that's being redone. Met Transit, along with the Minnesota Vikings, is building a 30-foot-wide pedestrian bridge. Met Transit's putting in about $3.5 million. The Vikings are putting in about $8 million for the construction of this bridge. It's 30 feet wide. There are elevator towers on either side. This is the actual construction photo of that. It crosses over the light rail. So when people get off the light rail station on that downtown East Block Plaza, they can just step over the platform there and land right down on the stadium plaza. So I think it'll make vertical transportation much safer. The Vikings are paying for the construction of this ship. The mast of the ship is actually our video marquee, so it will announce all our significant events that will happen. And on the back of the ship, here is the actual construction, on the back of the ship is where our commemorative bricks are going. We've sold several million dollars in commemorative bricks, and that money is being used to fund some of the improvements on the plaza. So we will have two external LED screens. One of them is on the mast. The other one you can see on the prow of the building that kind of sits as a rectangle there on the building, and those will both be capable to run video. So the economic impact, obviously the Minnesota jobs and businesses coming from construction. We've had an average of 1,300 workers on site every month. In total, we've had over 8,000 Minnesota workers who have worked on this project. And there have been well over 300 Minnesota businesses that have been involved. From our perspective and kind of the directive from both the governor and the legislature, this is definitely about Minnesota jobs. So for us, keeping 90% of the construction work with companies in Minnesota has certainly been important to us and I think has met the mission that you had outlined. And then the economic development in the surrounding areas, which I actually already touched on. So to date, we have over $1.3 billion in private economic development that is underway, some of it already completed. And then, of course, the economic impact of committed events. You've got Super Bowl coming in 2018. The estimate for that in terms of the impact in the last week in January and bringing over 100,000 people to the state for 4 or 5 days is about $400 million as an estimate. We will track that, and we will be able to show you over time what the sales tax collections have been for certain, you know, those periods in January and February, and then where they end up during the Super Bowl. The Final Four is also committed to come for 2019. That economic impact is estimated to be $200 million. And, of course, that event, because there are so few indoor stadiums that are capable of hosting this event, is an event that we should be able to get every 4 or 5 years. So that will be an ongoing event. We are continuing to go after some of these big events. I have kind of taken as my role and focus these last years, and I will continue to do it to attract these big events and these big bids. And we are also now trying to secure the X Games as a future event. They've got an RFP out for the X Games to come to a city for 2 years running for two specific summer seasons, one in 2017, so just next year, and then they would be here again in 2018. We are in the running for it, and we certainly, there are other cities that are competing as well, but we are cautiously optimistic. We think we have a good chance, and hopefully that's an event that we would be able to secure. X Games being sponsored by ESPN brings a lot of media attention, and it is really a whole millennial crowd that I think the community, it would be exciting to have an event like this be hosted in our state. We will have hundreds of public events in addition to Viking Games, and they all create significant employment opportunities. Right now, through our job fairs and all the outreach to the community, we've hired over 3,000 people. They are hired on a part-time basis. Some will work a lot because we're going to have, we literally have events booked in the stadium on a daily basis because all those club spaces, in fact, I'll show you some of them, all those club spaces become revenue opportunities for the state because we will be hosting corporate events, private events, nonprofit groups, school groups, you name it, will come in and essentially rent those spaces for different kinds of events. And all that money comes to the state. We have been very successful, and when I say we certainly had a whole system that was set up by the authority and the Vikings to try to make sure that we met these equity goals. But really, credit goes to Mortenson, Thor Construction, and HKS, our architects, who really focused on making sure that all the workforce and construction, minority and women goals that were set by the state were met. So from a workforce standpoint, the goal was 32% of the workforce would be minority. We are ending the project now with 36%. 6% were supposed to be women workers, and we currently are at 9%. And this is cumulative over the life of the project. From a construction business standpoint, the goal was in total 20%, 11% women-owned businesses, and we are right there at 11%, and 9% minority-owned businesses, and they currently have 10% of the work. Now, again, think about it. This is 20%. It's actually 21% where we're at of close to that billion-dollar construction budget has gone to women-owned and minority-owned businesses, all of which are Minnesota firms, because we didn't want to take work and send it outside of Minnesota to just meet these goals. We wanted it to be Minnesota companies. And then while there was not a specific veteran business goal, we set our own, and we actually have about 1% of the construction going to veteran-owned businesses, and about 4% of the workforce are veteran workers as well. We will have state-of-the-art technology. We've got two of the largest end zone video boards. We had X Games come for a site visit, and we used this. We ran some of their footage on our boards, and I'll tell you, it was pretty impressive as they came in. We definitely have some of the best acoustics and acoustical technology going into the stadium, which should make it a great concert venue. Here's a photograph of the field being laid, and you can see those retractable seats on the left side of the screen on the north side of the stadium. And here you get a better view once the field was completely done, and you can see that very large scoreboard there as well. The Will family has paid for a very significant art collection to go into the stadium, and the really great thing was we had a call for artists, and we have over 30 Minnesota artists that were chosen that are doing commissioned works, as well as some Minneapolis School of Art and Design, which is doing some murals in the concourses, and a lot of this work is just amazing, and again, really distinguishes us from a lot of other stadiums. Big, wide-open concourses will make it a perfect venue to continue rollerblading, as well as running clubs and maybe even walking groups. So people have lots of different opportunities that can bring them to the stadium. We've got signage going up in all our concession stands. The Vikings locker room is almost finished. You can see this is the actual construction photo here. I always point out when I talk about the locker room that we have been able to get agreement with the Vikings to include, so the state gets all the tour revenue. And in a lot of these stadiums, these tour programs bring people from all over the United States come to see these stadiums. It becomes a real tourist attraction in and of itself. So in Dallas, they have a program that actually has over 400,000 people a year come to tour that stadium. They make over $8 million in tour revenue. Now, all that tour revenue comes to the state, but the Vikings have agreed as part of the state's tours that we will have access to their locker room and their training rooms as part of our tour program as well. We've got seven club areas that are obviously going to be used for events, including the Viking games and other, whether it be concerts or our soccer game or any of these big events. But these club areas are actually, as I mentioned, what is bringing revenue on a day-to-day basis to the state through the rental of all these clubs. Few unique clubs that we have. One of them is called Club Purple. Club Purple is a really unique type of seating. It's got couch, sort of lounge seating that is going in. So folks will sit on those couches during games. Behind it is a food and beverage area. This shows those areas that the couches will be placed in. You can see furniture is all arriving now. And then there's food and beverage behind there. So we're renting this like all day long. We've got a number of weddings. We've got a lot of dinners and meeting events that happen. Because off this club space is an outdoor deck. And this outdoor deck has a fire pit. It will offer food and beverage options out there. And it has just amazing views of that park space. So imagine when that park is all done and the kind of views that are going to be available from there. So this is definitely one of our most rentable clubs. The Hyundai Club is our largest club. It's 30,000 square feet and can really take big dinners and meeting functions. It's got the Hyundai Club has a wall of glass that opens to the stadium bowl. The Vikings paid for the glass to retract so it can be completely open view to the stadium with no glass in front of you. And then you've got the wall of glass overlooking the city as well. So it's really amazing. The Medtronic Club is a club that's also being used for a lot of events. And then the Delta Sky Club is a club where it's right off the field. The team will run through that club halftime for the games. This is something that a lot of stadiums are doing, and it really adds to the excitement. But when you're in that club, and there also are field suites, you actually are standing right on the field. Again, there are some other stadiums that have field suites, but they're sunken. They aren't actually ground level right on the field. This club is great because we are renting the field to a lot of, say, corporations that are coming in and doing like team building or different activities, and then they can do lunch or dinner. Having that food and beverage in that club right off the field has been really helpful. And then we have what is this club? This, I think, is actually a picture from the Delta Club as well for food and beverage. And this shows you kind of the distance in the club looking out to the field. And then you see on the left-hand side, you know, the actual railings that you would stand on. There's clubs on either side. On the north side is the Ice Club, and on the south side is the Fire Club. And then we have an area that we are calling, they're called cabins, but they really are kind of like party suites, if you will, but they're available for smaller groups to rent. They're done like a Northwoods cabin, and they have views to the field as well. They're over on the end zone. We have booked already back-to-back concerts, August 19th and 20th. We've got Luke Bryan and Metallica. We will open the stadium with AC Milan versus Chelsea, an international soccer game that will actually bring in a real grass turf. We've got trade shows and conventions booked. We've got family shows. Feld Motorsports will still do their motocross and their monster trucks. And then we have many high school and college events. Baseball, we have, of course, the high school soccer and football state championship tournaments. We will be announcing the kickoff of rollerblading, and then many corporate meetings and private events. So a lot of people say to me, you know, I don't have season tickets for a football game, and I don't know that I'll ever get to the stadium. And I always tell people, we are going to have so many different types of events that you can come to, and we are really wanting people to know about all these things, whether it be high school football, soccer championships. In the summer, there's going to be some youth football camps that will be held at the stadium. There's going to be so many different events, rollerblading, running clubs. So I really hope that people start thinking about the stadium in a much broader context, because there will be many opportunities for folks to get in there. In the winter, for about 6 weeks, or in the early spring, I should say, for about 6 weeks, we'll close the stadium and we will just run baseball 24 hours a day. We already have high schools and colleges, and not only the University of Minnesota, but private schools, two-year colleges, and they literally go 24 hours a day booking blocks of time to get their spring games in so they don't have to travel. When we're hosting these baseball games, we're hoping to also open it up during those times for running clubs or rollerblading groups to come in and really make the most of utilizing the stadium in the spring when we have it closed for those baseball games. As I mentioned, we'll be hosting the Final Four. We could host the Frozen Four. We will still do our motocross and monster trucks, and it'll be a fabulous concert venue as well. And as I mentioned, we're competing to host the X Games in the summer. We don't have that yet, but we're hopeful. And we definitely are on schedule. We were looking at substantial completion coming July 2019, and we actually, as I mentioned, achieved that early in June. The lighting on the stadium can take many different looks. Colored lights have been put in. Some of it is done with the scoreboard. This is a photograph of our June board meeting when Mortensen gave us the key for substantial completion. With that, if you look at this budget slide, if you can actually see it, do we have hard copies of that budget slide? I should have brought those along. My apologies. We can make sure we provide that to you afterwards. But essentially, if you look at this, the sources and uses of funds, we are up to, in terms of the source of funds, we are up to $1.12 billion in total costs for the project. But I always point out, if you look at the fifth line on there, the fourth line, the state came in at $498 million and has stayed at $498 million. We have been very clear all along that there is obviously no more money from the state or the city. So all the additional money, the majority of it has obviously come from the team, from the Vikings. There have been some individual contributions that have come in from the from Aramark, our concessionaire, and SMG along the way have put in some additional dollars, which has brought us up to the $1.1 billion for this project. But the state money has remained the same. We currently are sitting with a budget of about right now. Boy, I'm having a hard time reading on this screen. Our dollar figures. Our contingency right now is sitting at about $5 million. But in fact, we will end the project. We obviously have more things that we continue to pay as we close out the project. But right now, our projection is to end with a million or two that would be left in our contingency. That money in the contingency will be kept until project closeout, which will be right around April of 2017, because we obviously will continue to have costs that come in and we don't want to have a final closeout too early. Are there any questions?
Thank you very much. I don't see any questions. Representative Dean has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. And Chair Kelmhagen, so when I look at the bottom line of that, which is the use of funds versus the description above, which was the sources of funds, there seems to be a $2 million difference. And I guess I'm curious, is that an additional team contribution, or how was that taken up? Because I can't read all the lines.
I know, and we will get it to you. Yeah. The middle section is, this was actually, okay, Amos is making copies, so we'll have them for you before we leave, because I know this is annoying. My apologies.
No worries.
This was our budget adjustment that we did at our last board meeting in May. And essentially, we were taking in $2 million more. So there is not a difference. If you look actually at the master project budget as of May 15th, it was $1.120689 and change in terms of the sources. And then the total sources was on the bottom the same number. Then on 520, there was adjustments of $2 million. It was essentially the team made another $2 million contribution. And so the adjusted budget at the end was $1,122 million as the source, and then the use at the bottom was exactly the same. So there's not a $2 million difference between sources and uses. It's the same. The only difference is the budget started out at 1.12, and it ended after the $2 million was put in at 1.122, and it's the same on the top and the bottom. So there is not a discrepancy, but we'll get you a copy of it. Amos will be back soon, and he'll have it for you. So,
thank you. Representative Dean, does that answer your question?
Does it answer your question?
Yes, for now it does, until I can look at
it. Yeah, and I can talk to you, you know, afterwards as
well.
Thank
you. Representative Dabney has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got a short series of questions, if that's all right.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Chair Kilmeligan, your presentation was very thorough, but the problem with thorough is it sparks a number of questions. What is the status of the issue around bird proofing the stadium? That has popped up from time to time. It seems at times 3M is just on the verge of something that maybe the stadium commission will put on the building that will protect the birds, and then it disappears. And if you could just update
sure.
me, please.
Ms. Kilmeligan.
Yes. Chair Hoppe, Representative Dabney. At this point, we are working with the State Audubon Society to actually look at the authority in the Vikings, coming up with an agreement for the State Audubon Society along with the university that we would commission a study to see if we actually had an issue or not. At this point, as I understand it, 3M is coming to the point through various testing where they do have a film that they think, again, I don't want to speak for 3M, but I do think that 3M is close to having a product that could be applied to glass that could give bird proofing, if you will, properties to that glass. At this time, we want to first find out if we have a problem with the birds or not before we spend the money to put film on the building, not knowing if we actually have a problem or not. So that's kind of where it sits. I can tell you, and I know it's been sort of month after month, we give updates that we continue to work with the Audubon Society, but I do think we will have something that we can share with people in terms of an agreement with the Audubon Society that we can share in July. It's not quite done, but we have a board meeting that is scheduled for July. When's our board meeting? July 15th, and we hope to be able to have the State Audubon Society with us and be able to announce what we're going to be doing with them.
Thank you. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Kilmeligan. What is the status of any agreements with the MSHSL for the high school league, for access utilization of the stadium? You referenced this. I'm just wondering where you're at with whatever negotiations are involved.
Oh, yeah. We've been working very closely with Dave Stead, who's the head of the State High School League, and all his staff. We have dates on the calendar, and they have dates on their schedule, excuse me, for both girls and boys soccer as well as the boys football tournaments. And those are currently scheduled, and we are working with our staff, and their staff are working to put together those events. And per the legislation, they come in, they pay no rent whatsoever. We pay the rent and the expenses for those events and work as partners with them. So we're very excited about that, and I think they're very excited to come back to the stadium for those events. And we really want to publicize those events because I think that's going to be a great way for people to come in and experience and enjoy the stadium.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chair Kilmeligan. I'll narrow it down to just one last question. You referenced the possible economic impact of the Super Bowl and Final Four, as well as potentially other events. And I'm just wondering, in the calculation of the possible economic impact, is that net the increased public expenses? And I'm thinking principally for the city of Minneapolis, offering increased police presence, because if you have 50,000 people or 100,000 people come into an event, a lot of the burden will fall to the city of Minneapolis to provide the appropriate law enforcement support for that. So are those projections net the increased public expense, number one? Number two, is the city compensated for those increased public expenses? And number three, I know that there's a tax give back to the Super Bowl. Is there also to the Final Four, is there contemplated in the proposal to the X Games and others tax benefits accruing to those private organizations?
Ms. Kelmhagen.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Kelmhagen.
Representative Dadby, Chair Hoppe. Let me try to remember all your questions, and I'll start from back, and I'll start from your last question and work backwards. First of all, as far as the tax benefits, the only tax exemption that we are doing is that we are doing that you are doing is to the Super Bowl committee. The Final Four, X Games, none of those have required any tax exemption, so it's only Super Bowl. And of course, Super Bowl is definitely got the major economic impact as well. From the position of, I've been involved in putting together all the bids and, you know, doing all the work around all these big proposals. And kind of our rule of thumb for our cities and our state is the direct expenses that are incurred will be covered either by the host committees. In the case of Super Bowl, there's a local organizing committee that is raising private money. And the same thing is true for the Final Four. X Games is not quite as large an event in terms of the kind of security issues and that kind of thing, but there is no direct expenses that would fall to the city. Now, clearly, the city's normal police presence and, you know, what happens around the city in general would be provided, but the incremental cost over and above that, the commitments are that will be paid by the local organizing committee so that the city will not have a direct out-of-pocket expense for these big events. And that's kind of how these bids have been put together and the kind of commitments that have been made. We clearly look at it as a partnership. The city clearly gets a lot of benefit from a tax perspective from all these people coming, and you know, they stay in hotels throughout the region, but clearly the downtown Minneapolis hotels in particular should all be full, and so, and restaurants and shopping and that kind of thing. So there are definitely a lot of direct tax benefits that come from them, but we recognize the fact that the city has to be compensated for some of those incremental expenses that they will incur from all the security that's required around these big events. So as part of the bids and part of our fundraising that is done, that's all put in place.
Thank you again, Mr. Chair. Thank you again, Chair. Mm-hmm.
Any other questions, members? With that, thank you very much. Always informative. A lot of information there.
Thank you.
And with that, Mr. Bagley, if you want to come down and share a little bit of a Vikings update, we'd appreciate it. We need to be out of this room by 2 o'clock, so... All right, that was a joke. I'm just kidding. Mr. Bagley, welcome back. Please tell
Co-chair
us what you want
to hear. And Dean, thank you, and members. Appreciate the chance to be here just to give a quick update. Michelle was very thorough, and, you know, it's 22 days to go, 22 days out from this long journey coming to a close, and with an incredible outcome. This is going to be an amazing building, and thank you to the legislature and governor and the public-private partnership and for those many years at the Capitol that we advocated for. This stadium is going to deliver A, B, and C. I think it has more than we advocated, but it has and will deliver economic momentum and energy, as Michelle talked about. There's 300 Minnesota businesses on this project. the 8,000 construction workers have worked on it. Of the $1.1 billion stadium, 90% of those dollars have returned to the state of Minnesota. There's been $1 billion of investment that the stadium has been a catalyst for in the East Town area, in the neighborhood surrounding the stadium. The events that Michelle talked about, Super Bowl, Final Four, we'd have never have gotten without the stadium. So this has delivered on that promise or on that advocacy that we talked about for those many years. So the stadium, as Michelle said, it was $975 million when it passed the legislature in May of 2012. It is now at $1.1 billion. The Vikings and the Wolf family have added an additional $125 million-plus on top of the $477 that was part of the agreement that passed the legislature. So Vikings / private investment is over $600 million in the project, about 54% of the cost. The building, as you've seen, some of you have had a chance to tour it, and as you drive by and you've seen the media coverage, it's an incredible building, and we believe it's going to be the best fan experience in the NFL and one of the best, if not the best, stadiums in the country. The seats and the suites are closer to the action than any in the league. It has a very intimate setting, a very intimate feel with ideal sight lines. It's a very, when you walk in, you get a sense of intimacy that feels more like an arena rather than a vast NFL stadium like many you see in the country. So a great feel, a great setting. We've invested significant dollars in technology. The scoreboards, they may not be the largest in the league, but they're the 10th largest, but they are the ideal scoreboards. They're the lowest, and they're right in your natural line of sight, and they're tremendous. We've invested in additional 2,000 high-definition televisions throughout the stadium. There's an app that fans will engage with. When you walk, it's a wayfinding app. You can find your way to the stadium, find parking. When you get in the stadium, you find your way around the stadium. But it'll also provide fan interaction, a two-way communication. We can test out food delivery, order merchandise, but it will also provide highlights, stats, follow your fantasy football league and team, so that the app will be a tremendous fan benefit and amenity as well. This indoor-outdoor stadium that Michelle walked you through, we think is ideal for our climate and our brand. The roof is this ETFE polymer fabric, is very reflective to sound, so we think it's going to be loud. We think it's going to be a home field advantage. And when you get in the stadium for a Viking game, the first one being coming up on August 28th, and the first preseason game is going to be an electric atmosphere. That's actually a preseason game, but it's the third preseason game of the year, which means the starters will play three quarters. It's a noon Sunday game. It'll be nationally broadcast. It is going to be a game day atmosphere and a dress rehearsal, if you will, for the regular season. So very, very excited about the building and what it's going to mean for Viking fans, as well as everybody in the state of Minnesota who comes into the building. In terms of sales, we're still a notch ahead of schedule. Our partners and fans have stepped up. We're down to about 1,500 or so, less than 2,000 stadium builder's licenses. We have two suites left out of the 131 that are for sale. But we're appreciative. Our fans, our sponsors, our partners have stepped up. They've responded to the stadium, incredible stadium. They've also responded to the 2016 Vikings. We have a very exciting team, very young, strong defense led by Coach Zimmer. We're very excited about the upcoming football season. Training camp is just a month or so away, July 28th. Our players report to Mankato. We also have just recently had an agreement approved by the plan development approved by the city of Eagan to advance our practice facility and team headquarters in that community. We're excited about that. So a lot of great things happening at the Vikings, both on the field and off the field, but this stadium is going to be incredible. We're very excited about it. Our team is excited about it. Our fans are excited about it, and I hope you all are as well. With that, co-chairs, I appreciate the chance to give a quick update from our corner, and happy to answer any questions if there are any.
Thank you, Mr. Bagley. Any questions from the members? Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Lester, do you have a sense, I know Michelle said something about all the different Minnesota companies that participated in the construction. Do you have a sense of how much, what percentage of American-made materials are in the building, and how much steel is American-made and all that kind of stuff? Do you have a sense for that?
Mr. Bagley.
Senator Tomasoni, members, the legislation required, where practicable, that we would use steel that was produced or contributed from the Iron Range mines, and so there has been that directive, and there's been that energy. I think the companies that are involved, the 300 Minnesota businesses, as well as the employees, the 8,000 plus workers that have worked there. In addition, we've partnered with, you know, we're fortunate to live in a state where we have 17 Fortune 500 companies, and virtually all of them have partnered on this stadium in some form or fashion. So in terms of the investment or percentage of American-made products, may have to do some research on that, or maybe Michelle has that answer. I don't have that direct answer.
We have the only steel that was not essentially Minnesota steel, and I think we talked about this at the time, in that very large ridge truss, because of the loads it had to carry, we needed a grade of steel that essentially was only available outside of Minnesota. But within our overall steel bid, it was less than $10 million. It wasn't a significant amount of, you know, percentage-wise of the budget. So I think that was probably from an outside perspective, that was probably the biggest piece. But we had gone through and we checked with, you know, there was a lot of investigation that went down to make sure that we verified that grade of steel, it was like a grade 6 or something. I'm not going to pull the... But we could get you, if you want any more specific information, right, we could get that from Mortenson.
That's close enough. And then maybe, Mr. Chair, I think I saw something up there where you had 1,500 construction workers in July of 2015. Was that the total number that you ended up having, or what?
No, there were over 8,000 workers throughout the life of the project, but every day there were about 1,500 workers on site. You know, that was the average number over the life of the project. This project was 30 months, which also for a $1.1 billion building, I believe for a stadium of its size, it is definitely the shortest construction cycle that has ever been done. Again, kudos to Mortenson. I think that this is really going to be held out as an example of how to, you know, get something done.
Nice work.
If you want to, maybe you just want to stay up there and slide over to the other microphone. And
sure.
I've got one quick question for Mr. Bagley. I'm sure you worked with a lot of other, looked at other stadiums and worked with other teams in the league. Are you now starting to get other teams and other cities coming here to look at this and saying, oh, we got to do that?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, absolutely. We did. The 12 years, so the 12 years at the legislature plus 4 in design and construction, so 16 years, many of us have worked on this project, incredible team effort by all. But, yeah, during that 12-year slog, we did go we've looked at every other NFL stadium, and we took some ideas, and we learned some things that we didn't want to do. Indianapolis is a beautiful stadium, for example, but they cut out in their construction project escalators, and now they have jams, they have lines formed at the escalators. So we were determined not to make that mistake and not cut back on the vertical circulation, for example. So a lot of things we learned, but yeah, we did travel the globe and look at all NFL stadiums and baseball and hockey and arenas as well. We've started construction, we've had a number of teams. The Atlanta Falcons have come and looked at our stadium. The San Diego Chargers have come. The Oakland Raiders have come, and also the St. Louis Rams, now the Los Angeles Rams, have hired the same architect, HKS Architect out of Dallas, Architects out of Dallas, HKS designed Indianapolis, Dallas, and Minnesota, three very different projects, but three beautiful stadiums, and now they've been contracted to design the new Rams Stadium in Inglewood, California. So some of the things that they've taken from our project include the ETFE roof. The new stadium in Los Angeles is going to have an ETFE clear roof as part of their build. It's an outdoor stadium, but it's going to have a roof on top. So those are some examples of teams that have come in and taken a close look at our project.
Yeah, we've been contacted by a lot of different groups, including some cities and state agencies, that are looking at some of the technology that we used. The one thing that I get the most questions about that I think is going to attract the most attention is that roof. Because when we were looking, as we explored the design, we traveled and looked at every indoor stadium. And, of course, the latest and greatest thing at the time were these retractable roofs. And as we went to those cities and looked at those stadiums, it didn't matter if it was Houston or Phoenix or Detroit or Indianapolis. What they all said was, you know, in the end, nobody ever really wants to be cold and nobody ever really wants to be hot. They always wanted 70 degrees, so we really don't open the roof very often. And what you find with those retractable roofs versus what we've done with that ETFE and then all that glass, you don't really get much of a view because it's kind of like a sunroof. When the roof is closed, which is most of the time, it's almost like being in a warehouse, as in a sense. And then even when it's open, it's like the sunroof to your car. You don't really get a view of the city. You get to look at, you know, sun and clouds, which is nice, but it's not like sitting out at Twins at the Target Field and getting that incredible view of the skyline. So I think what we've done with this, we are the largest installation of ETFE right now in North America. And I think it's been used for over 30 years in Europe and New Zealand, but it's never been used to this extent in North America. So I think we are going to attract a lot of attention. I think we're going to get a lot of visitors and tourists coming to see what it's all about. When people walk into the stadium, they do say, I feel like I'm outside. I mean, you really do. Even in the winter at 3, 4 in the afternoon, when they were working on construction, they never had the lights on because it was so light in that stadium. So I think people are going to be really excited. The only other thing I wanted to mention is July 23rd and 24th, our first event is this public open house. We hope to get more than 100,000 people coming from all over the state to tour the stadium. We're going to have outdoor live bands all day long, both days, all sorts of family activities. The whole park plaza will be programmed. There'll be some free food. It's going to be really exciting. And we had already over 70,000 people have downloaded free time tickets. You can go to Ticketmaster.com. You can pick an hour block of time to come to the stadium. There's no fee to download a ticket or anything. But it is really, I think, we're going to have people coming from all over the state, and we really want to make that a celebration for the public.
Other questions, members? I will say on our next and maybe our last meeting as a commission, we're going to be touring the new stadium, and I don't know what year it was. I don't remember when we toured the Metrodome, and it needed to be replaced. I mean, when you went underneath, pieces of concrete were falling down, and things were rusty and falling apart, and the locker room was really small. I mean, the whole thing just was falling apart. So it's, as Mr. Bagley, as you said, this has been a long process, but it's pretty impressive.
Thank you very much.
Thank you both. And with that, I think we're on to our last item of business, as I just mentioned. What do we do about ourselves? I mean, legally, we are going to meet one more time as per the law in 2009 or whenever we were established. And that will be the tour that we do on August 17th. And after that, I don't know, maybe we need to leave it up to the speaker and the majority leader next year, or maybe we all get together in January and, you know, assuming we're all back and figure out what we're doing. I don't know. Any thoughts on... We had legislation to sunset. We didn't. It didn't go anywhere this year, so officially we're still continuing. I think the original thought was to sunset once the stadium was open, but maybe it will transition into something different. I don't know. Any thoughts?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
I think the original intent of this commission was to look at all the stadiums, too, and to maybe get some coordination. I don't know. That doesn't seem to appeal to too many people. That, but that was like the XL, the competition between all the stadiums, and now if we're going to have a soccer stadium coming in, is that going to be viable? I personally don't feel like there's a need for this commission ongoing, this particular one. I think it's in the hands of the commissioners that have it, and then the authority after that. They did a good job, but that was the thought, the original from Senator Reinhart, actually.
Senator Thompson.
Mr. Chairman, I don't see any reason to dissolve the commission just yet. We don't want to meet. It doesn't hurt anything. And if we ever see a need to meet, then we're still here. So I would say that if since the legislation doesn't dissolve the commission on a specific date, we may someday want to get back together and find out some particulars about all the stadiums in the state and be able to get updates on them. So I would think that for now we just keep the status quo as is, and if anybody has a burning desire to eliminate the commission in the future, I suppose we can do that in law.
Well, at least for today, that's what we're going to do. Since we don't have a quorum, we can't legally officially do anything anyhow. But I think you're probably right, and it will wind up, we'll let the next legislature, the House and the Senate, you know, figure out what they want to do. And if either of you want to comment, Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree with Senator Rosen that that there was a greater intent than there was effect. And I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but that certainly was the lesson that I've taken away. You know, Chair Kilmhelgen spoke of the rock concerts, or the concerts that are going to be at the new stadium, and that's probably going to be a fantastic concert experience. But at the same time, my city is putting $25 million, or is it $50 million? Into rehabbing the Target Center, which badly needs it, so that it's a better concert experience. And I would imagine that if or when that new soccer stadium gets built in St. Paul, they're not going to sit on that land for 10 soccer games a year or 20, whatever it would be. They're going to host concerts and other events, which just stretches that concert experience and that revenue thinner and thinner and thinner. Across multiple public forums, and that's a problem when it's the taxpayers who are subsidizing all of those forums in one form or another. This hasn't proven to be an effective forum, for lack of a better word, to explore those financial dynamics for the host cities and for the state. There may not be a gain in killing it off, Senator Tomasoni, but there doesn't seem to have been much of a gain in having this commission either. So we have been able to do some of our oversight functions, but we've been limited in having that larger conversation. And maybe that just has to be left up to the legislature rather than a commission. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dabney, I guess I will tend to just challenge you a little bit on that the focus was this commission was brought up because of the new stadium and the state's commitment and Minneapolis's commitment, which was the $50 million to Target, but that came through this bill and through their convention center going off. So that was a contributing part of the Target Center's or Minneapolis's contribution was to go to the Target Center. And I think our attention has been focused on this new stadium, which is the largest project ever in the state's history, and rightly so. You look at the concerts that have been brought in from Target Field. Those probably never would have come in But now we have this outdoor arena such as that. I think it does draw more business in when you have a variety of venues that are going to compete in a healthy way, because competition is good. And then it's just going to benefit the whole region because more people want to perform and come to the cities. So I guess I look at this commission as far as just being making sure that the commissioners and the authority have been doing their job, and they are. They're fiscally responsible. They came in above and beyond our expectations as far as 6 weeks early with Mortensen's. I think, and if there was anything that did show up that was going to be a problem, we would have certainly have been able to call this commission together and really say, okay, what's going on? Where is there a problem? But the framework, the leadership, and how the system was set up in this authority with the commissioners in charge, I think has been very, very good and has taken the load off our backs.
Well, I, for one, am surprised nobody has mentioned Carver County or the city of Chaska or the Ryder Cup. But, oh, wait, someone just did. How about that? With that, members, I should ask, is there anybody in the audience that wants to, anybody else that wants to testify in anything? Not seeing anybody running down. With that, we are adjourned. See you in August. There we go. On time.